Hi, this is Dr. William Renner. Thank you for joining us in this evidence-based podcast on wellness. I'm here with Dr. Alan Safdie, world-famous gastroenterologist, internist, and expert on nutrition. We're talking about dementia. Alan, you were mentioning before I get into the new things in 2025, you mentioned some things about some tests that were available.
Yeah, Bill. And we do realize it's 2026, but we're going to go over some of the things from 2025. And I wanted to give you the exact actual website because I think this testing is really good for hearing tests being one of the modifiable risk factors we have. And it's www.nationalhearingtest.org. And it's a very good hearing test that you can do at home in a quiet room. And one of the other tests that we've talked about in the past that I think are very good, and I've done it probably four times a year for years. Is it's from ARP because it's similar testing that we would even use in a hospital. It's called stayingsharp.arp.org. And why do I like that test? You could do it every 30 days if you want, but it looks at a whole bunch of different areas. You know, Bill, it would look at your working memory. You know, how well is your memory? You know, your processing speed. Your sustained attention, cognitive flexibility, and recognition memory, all these things are really important. It's the only thing I use AARP for, but I think it's a very good test. And
Well, they have a lot of good things.
so I think it's really something that people may want to consider, and it tracks you over time, whether you're improving, staying stable. And I wouldn't worry about test-to-test variation. I do worry about if, you know, there's a significant decline that continues to decline.
Yes, one thing I'll say to men, my wife recently made me go to this world famous hearing center at the Cincinnati Children's Hospital to have my hearing test because she said I couldn't hear when she talked. And
Just because you didn't want to, but
sadly, my hearing was normal. What's that tell you about me? All right. Let's talk, continue our talk about dementia. So, what changed in dementia diagnosis in 2025?
you know, we 2025 was actually kind of a breakthrough year, you know, with fundamental changes. And some years we don't have many breakthroughs, but we shifted towards earlier detection and prevention. You know, those 14 different preventable factors and many more that we're understanding nutrition-wise. We now have blood tests that are available to aid in Alzheimer's diagnosis. We have lifestyle trials, and we understand inflammation is now central to how we understand disease progression. So, because Bill, you could diagnose things earlier and it's more accessible, intervention is happening earlier before irreversible brain damage occurs. So, it's really, and I wouldn't say a cool year, but it's a, from a medical standpoint, a very interesting year because we can find these diseases much earlier with a lot more certainty.
Well, what about the Pointer study? Wasn't that a key study?
Yeah, it's a lifestyle study. You know, the Pointer study is a structured program that you're taking people, and you know, Dean Ornish has studied that. You know, you're taking people that have cognitive impairment, which mild cognitive impairment in over 65 year age group is a lot of people, maybe one out of three, and you're putting them on a structured program, and then you're testing them cognitively, and you know, it involves exercise. It involves exceptionally good nutrition, cognitive engagement, things like listening to this, controlling vascular risk control. And, you know, the Pointer study can preserve cognition over 2 years. And the Pointer study actually was the participants functioned cognitively as if they were 1 or 2 years younger by just doing these things. Dean Ornish took people that even had dementia and, you know, cognitive impairment. They improved, not all of them, but a significant portion of them improved. So lifestyle medicine, lifestyle programs, and you can structure your own, really may be tremendously beneficial.
All right, great. Briefly tell me about how you'd structure that. I know we talked about that in the last talk. What were the, would you go over those things just briefly? Just give me three things.
So in Dean Ornish's study, where he are people that already had cognitive impairment, he put them on a plant-based diet. You have to be on a 100% plant-based diet? Absolutely. Well, I would say probably not, but avoiding the foods with preservatives and other things. But a significant portion of your diet is plant-based. He had them exercising, and it was structured exercise that they did, and not just aerobic exercise, but resistance training also. He had them doing meditation. I must admit, I'm terrible at meditation, but I meditate when I'm taking a hike or a walk, and I may not even realize, hey, I just walked 3 miles, and I'm just letting my brain wander during that period of time or thinking of things. So these lifestyle programs that have cognitive challenges, a mind type diet or Mediterranean type diet, and exercise, and then structured health monitoring by your doctors are the things that I would recommend.
All right. Another thing that comes into consideration frequently is inflammation. How does that fit in?
How does inflammation fit in? Inflammation appears central, especially in people that are high risk carriers, this APOE4 carriers. So Alzheimer's is not just a protein aggregation disease, these APOE4 proteins and these tau tangles, but it also is an immune and vascular disease. So inflammation is the heart of a lot of diseases, whether it be cancer, whether it may be dementia, or some certain types of dementia. As mentioned, there's numerous different types of dementia that one can have, but it may be one of the things that sets it off and helps it progress. When you're doing the lifestyle modifications that we just discussed, that may decrease inflammation significantly. When you're eating unhealthy, when you're having lots of preservatives, lots of fast food, blood sugar's high, sedentary lifestyle increases inflammation.
All right, let's talk about vaccines. All of a sudden, vaccines appear to be controversial, even though it's so obvious that they've changed our life expectancies dramatically. But tell me about vaccines and dementia.
Vaccines are, this is my personal opinion. They've been proven over many years, as Bill just mentioned, to increase life expectancy, get rid of not just mortality, but morbidity. And everything out there has some risk. So if you find something without any risk whatsoever, let me know. But almost every single thing has risk. Sitting here in this chair has risk because I'm being sedentary right now. If I drank too much water, which I've been drinking right here, that can have too much risk, too little water. So all these things have risk. Vaccines, there was observational studies, and one of the most best one was suggesting shingles vaccine was associated with lower risk of dementia. It's not a definitive causation, but the signal is consistent and biologically plausible. When you get these viruses, even with the flu, it gets into your brain. These other viruses can cause an inflammatory response that can last up to a year after you actually get rid of the disease. So there's higher risk of even coronary or heart attacks in people after significant viral illnesses. That's well after the viral illness itself subsided. So they do cause systemic inflammation in the body. And so to having these vaccines to prevent these may be a significant way of decreasing your dementia risk. Also, having had shingles when I was in college, you don't want it.
Yeah, having worked in the emergency room for multiple years, paying my way through medical school and residencies, you do not want shingles. It is highly painful. I'm very uncomfortable, people. All right. What about blood tests? What about the blood tests for dementia?
So what do they do and what don't they do? Again, dementia is a syndrome. So your memory decline, significant clinical memory decline, dementia. It doesn't tell you whether you have vascular dementia or Alzheimer's disease, some of these blood tests. So what are the FDA cleared blood tests to actually do. And so they are cleared by the FDA, at least at the present time. And it measures amyloid related biomarkers, you know, these amyloid that get stuck in your brain, to help determine whether Alzheimer's pathology exists in you. And it's for people over the age of 55. Why are they important? Because it improves access and speeds diagnosis. You know, who should get these tests? You know, I think adults with significant cognitive symptoms where the diagnosis is uncertain. If you know it's some traumatic brain injury, it's reasonable to get the blood test, but it's not for screening healthy asymptomatic individuals. Have I had the blood test or Bill had the blood test? No. What replace PET scans or spinal taps? Not entirely. It can reduce the risk, you know, the need for those in many cases. And what it does is triage who truly needs advanced testing, and it may lead to earlier diagnosis. And if you can lead to earlier diagnosis, we can talk about some of these lifestyle modifications, do interventions, planning, and hopefully potentially better outcomes over time.
All right. Well, recognizing that neither one of us are neurologists, what's a practical workup with someone who you suspect might have dementia?
Well, Bill, I'm going to start with your work. No, I'm just kidding. So one of the beginning workups is even for internists, gastroenterologists, even for, you know, for all of us, is cognitive testing. You know, you can't really start the workup until you have cognitive testing, functional assessments, medication reviews. Could it be the medications that are causing this? Look at their labs for reversible causes. Do they have B12 deficiency? You know, we're looking for other types of things, brain imaging. Do they have normal pressure, hydrocephalus, or some other reason where they have too much fluid buildup in the brain? And then using the biomarkers when appropriate. And we want to make sure conditions can mimic dementia. You can have depression, can mimic dementia. Sleep apnea can cause dementia type symptomatology. Medications, there's a whole list of medications, maybe we'll talk about that in the future, that can cause problems with memory. I mentioned B12 and thyroid. We talked about hearing loss and vision loss and delirium. You know, we need to go through all those, get the appropriate blood test, but starting really with the cognitive and functional assessments and medication review and laboratory review.
All right, Alan, this has been a great review of dementia. Do you have any final words or suggestions for our audience?
You know, what may surprise us over the next 5 years that prevention, early intervention, not late stage treatment where we're at, may have the biggest impact on cognitive aging. So don't bury your head in the sand. You know, I do those ARP assessments. I've done some at the hospital too. I like doing them. I like taking tests, which is strange. I find it enjoyable. I don't mind doing the hearing test, the vision test. You know, I want to get my routine. I know what my B12 or methylmalonic acid is on a yearly basis. You know, I want to know what my thyroid function tests are. I want to know how well I'm sleeping. So you're looking at every aspect of your life. And that's one of the problems with medicine is, you know, how well are you sleeping? Not often discussed. You know, other than are you sleeping? I'll go, yeah. You know, how many times do you wake up? Can you go right back to sleep? You know, how many hours of sleep do you get? All these things need to be discussed with your doctor. Your nutrition, especially your exercise plans. So I think, you know, prevention and early intervention is going to be where we're at over the next 5 years.
All right, great. Excellent talk. I'm looking forward to hearing from you again, Alan.
Thank you, Bill.